In 2013, Naughty Dog released The Last of Us for PlayStation 3. It was the story of a fungal infection that turned people into mindless, zombie-like creatures. While this is not a new story by any means, it was the relationship formed between Joel and Ellie against the backdrop of the zombie apocalypse that makes this franchise so special. The game won several Game of the Year awards, and more importantly, the love and admiration of your co-host Barry. It has since spawned a sequel and a HBO series that has vaulted the franchise into a whole nother level of popularity, but more importantly, the love and admiration of your co-host Chrissy. While this story is fiction, there are elements of truth to it. Cordyceps fungi is able to attach itself to ants, eventually controlling its mind and turning it into a zombie. Is it possible they can do the same in humans? Well, I don't know about that, but in this episode of the podcast, we're going to talk about some historical fungal infections that can only be described as some weird.
Welcome to the Some Weird Podcast, a podcast about strange and unusual stories told by us, a sister and brother team hailing from the island of Newfoundland. And I'm your co-host Chrissy.
And I'm your co-host Barry. This episode was inspired by one of the greatest video games / TV series adaptations of all time, The Last of Us.
You've been singing the praises of The Last of Us since it came out, and it's oft referenced in your trivia nights. I'm not a gamer, as you alluded to, I guess, in your intro, but I watched my 16-year-old play the game last summer, and you're not kidding. It's such a good video game. Plus, the HBO adaptation was amazing.
Yeah, I like to say that Ted's my other trivia host, and you know him well here at the Some Weird Podcast. He's been on several times. We're ahead of the curve. We were singing the praise of this game long before the HBO series.
Is it still cool, though? Like, do you guys still think it's cool, or is it like, oh, everyone likes it now, so it's not cool?
Yeah, that's right. I like to say we're on the ground floor. We liked it before it was cool. That's the way I look at it.
That's for sure.
There was a couple other quick things I want to mention. Number one is that we had to put a couple of re-releases out recently. Just to let the listeners know, I did contract COVID for the second time very recently, which kind of knocked me out for a little bit. It wasn't too bad, but it was definitely enough to where I didn't feel that I was able to record. And even if I was, my voice was to the point where it probably wouldn't have came across good enough for the high quality that we hear pump out at the Some Weird Podcast.
The stellar high quality baritone voice of Barry would have been exactly. All snotty and gross. So that's okay. I think people enjoyed the re-release of the old hag.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's that. And the other thing I want to mention is we may have a real life Mandela effect here on the Some Weird Podcast. So an episode or two ago, I discussed a time when I was watching a TV show called Breakfast Television, where we saw a bunch of kids singing a 50 Cent song, Motherfucking P.I.M.P.
Yeah.
And I thought it was hilarious. And I mentioned the story on the podcast. And you could not find that clip.
Nope.
I started lurching. I could not find that clip. I asked my wife about it. She kind of remembers it, but not really.
Yeah.
So I reached out to a friend of mine in Ontario because I specifically recall having this conversation with her. So hopefully she gets back to me and say that, no, you're not crazy. This isn't a Mandela effect. This actually did happen. But I may have made that story up, or maybe in my mind, or maybe it happened in some parallel universe, like what happens in Mandela effects.
Yeah, that was weird. Obviously, I'd never seen it because I did live in Toronto, but couldn't find anything, not a mention, not a sniff of it, not even on Reddit. And everything is there.
I remember when I talked about that MacGyver thing, my buddy banging the things, you found that just like that. So I
mean, yes.
If it existed, it's out there. So I must have Mandela affected myself.
Maybe.
Or City TV done a very good job of editing scrubbing this out of the internet, scrubbing it. There you go.
Yep. If anyone did see that, let us know, because maybe you've uncovered a new Mandela effect to make all the lists that you'll see when you Google it.
Never did believe in the parallel universe theory, but now I just might.
There you go. I hope that's true.
But that's not what we're here to talk about. I just wanted a few housekeeping items that have been there for the last couple of days I wanted to talk about next time we record it. So we got that out of the way. Again, we're here to talk more about fungal infections and Last of Us inspired things. So I'm going to start here by stating that you and I certainly, I wouldn't say we're history buffs, but we're very interested in history, and specifically history about World War II. You're probably more of a buff to me since you have a degree in history, but certainly both of us, we've worked World War II into the podcast several times.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, our very first episode, The Bell, All, and Boom, had direct connections to World War II and the Cold War aftermath.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that happens during wartime is food rationing. Now, I remember when the Gulf War happened back in the 90s, there was all kinds of stories of people going out and buying flour and sugar and hoarding it all. Like, Why is this? Like, are they afraid that they're not going to be able to sweeten their coffee, or what's the deal?
It's either that or they're like, you know what, now that we're at war, I think I'm going to pursue my dream of becoming a full-time professional baker. Because what do people really do with all the flour? Like, I don't make bread on regular days. Why am I going to make it now in wartime?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. It's just kind of like when COVID first came and everyone started going out and buying like all the toilet paper they could find. Like, what do you think is going to happen? Is this virus is going to prevent the production of toilet paper?
Yeah, that's a really good example.
But one thing that's interesting is that, you know, so many wars are fought to stop spreading communism, yet during wartime, we go to the communist model of rationing food.
That's true. Ironic, yeah.
But going back to World War II, one of the most shocking events of World War II was the ease in which Germany kind of steamrolled France. In World War I, much of the trench warfare occurred in France, and, you know, I believe Germany was actually on enemy soil when they finally surrendered. Yet in World War II, they blew through France in a couple of weeks, and France surrendered. Hitler famously made the French surrender in the same train car where the treaty to end World War I was signed, which is, you know, the ultimate revenge move, I think.
Mm-hmm.
As part of the armistice agreement, Germany basically occupied 3/5 of France, and Vichy France was set up to run the rest of it. And that was known as a puppet state, if you were to believe a certain high school history teacher.
Sparked my interest in history 100%.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we said it before that our high school, Bishop Malil, had an all-star team of teachers. There's no doubt about it. He was certainly right there amongst the top of them all.
Yep.
But yeah, it's France and, you know, all their overseas colonies was run by Vichy France. They were basically set up to not tie up German resources. They kind of ran France, but basically, you know, Germany told them what to do and they did it. They came up with all these directives for France. And one of the things that they came up with, there's a government agency was established to control the supply of grain from the field to the mill to the bakery. The group was known as the ONIC. That stands for something, French thing that I don't know how to pronounce. So we'll just call it the ONIC or the OINC, maybe OINC.
ONIC.
ONIC. Basically gave the government a monopoly on the sale of flour, allowing government to control the supply in times of war. I guess that's what they like to do, right? It also meant that the baker had very little control on the quality as the grain was purchased directly from ONIC. So they had no choice. They had to buy it off of them. And, you know, if it was great grain, that was good. If it was bad grain, well, that's all they could buy anyway. So once World War II finally ended, ONIC or ONIC maintained its monopoly, but some of the rules were relaxed. So the bakers could now go to the individual millers, get their grain instead of buying it directly from the ONIC. So any excess grain, they would sell to the ONIC and they would redistribute it based on demand. So basically what I'm saying here is that a baker could go in and say, you know, I want your grain. That guy will give the best grain because he kind of deals with this guy individually. Mm. And all the shit he got left over that's not so good, he sells it to this government agency and they sell that to the places that don't have these mills directly where bakers can come. And these other bakers got no choice but to buy it because they're not allowed to get it anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great deal for the mill crowd because, you know, basically they can treat their customers with the best stuff and then sell everything else off to the government and the government got to redistribute it however they see fit, right?
Right.
Kind of like fruit in Newfoundland. Like everything falls off the truck, they send here is what I've heard before. So
I was thinking that when you were getting on with that and I'm like, shut up, keep it to yourself. Like I never saw real corn until I left Newfoundland.
Yeah, when I was for here, corn was in a can. You open up a can and it was like full of juice and four cobs in there.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But yeah, like I said, so it worked out great for the mill producers or the grain producers. They kept good contact with their, you know, personal bakers or the ones that they dealt with in close proximity, and then they could just sell the rest to the government, and the government just shipped it off to wherever.
Mm-hmm.
So these bakers in these other districts that were far away had no choice but to buy the lower quality grain because they had no direct places where they can go buy it, and there's only one place to get it, was to this government agency. So in August of 1951, the French district around the village of Pont-Saint-Esprit, and again, I'm butchering that, I know, and that's what we do here in this podcast is butcher pronunciations.
I think every podcast does that.
Yeah. So this area, Pont-Saint-Esprit, they begin having outbreaks of food poisoning. People are complaining of violent diarrhea, vomiting, and headaches. Everyone that was reporting these issues had bought bread from local bakeries. In each town, bakeries blamed the poisoning on the flour they received. They said that they received the flour, it was very gray, it was sticky dough, and one person even claimed there was worms in the flour.
Oh, God.
Again, they had no choice. They had to buy this flour because there's nowhere else to get it, and they need flour to break bread, so this is the situation that we're in. Like I said, all these towns began to experience issues, but no town had the issues nearly as profound as the ones that were reported in Pont-Saint-Esprit. On August 16th, the two doctors that were in the town, their waiting rooms were absolutely filled with patients. Patients complained that they couldn't sleep, they were having insomnia, and they smelled. And people compared the smell to that of a dead mouse. Now, you ever smelled a dead mouse?
No. Does it have a distinct smell, like, different from all other dead organic things?
Well, yeah, I guess any dead organic thing, yeah. But dead mouse I've smelled before. I remember one time in our office, there was this weird smell coming from the office, and we moved out, like, one of the cabinets, and there was this squished mouse back there.
Oh.
And to say it stunk was doing discredit to the word stink, because it was the most foul thing I've ever smelled in my life.
But it's so tiny.
A little baby's still tiny, but when it takes a dump, it stinks. But not at first. Then he starts feeding it normal food. Like, it smells like popcorn at the beginning. But
that's true. That's true. Baby shit don't stink for the first few months.
Then when it starts stinking, oh boy.
Oh yeah.
So again, in addition to all these people having the issues with the vomiting, diarrhea, and all that, there's a lot of strange things happening in the town. People start having all these like crazy hallucinations. One little girl was complaining she's being chased by tigers. There's a woman who was sobbing because she said her children were grounded up and turned into sausages.
Oh, that's like a 1920s propaganda cartoon.
Yeah. A man smashed all his furniture, and they asked him why he did. He said the furniture were actually beasts that were trying to attack him.
Oh, my God.
A married couple were seen getting in knife fights with each other, like monkeys in open waters, in international waters.
Okay.
Even animals were exhibiting strange behavior. There was dogs that had their teeth chipped away to nothing because they're chewing on stones. Ducks were walking like penguins.
What?
Yeah.
That's not true, is it? The duck thing?
That's what they say, yeah.
Okay.
They say people were constantly running away from the quote-unquote flames that were burning the town. One man was convinced that red snakes were eating his brain, jumped out of a second-story window, and succumbed to his injuries. One guy tried to jump off a bridge into a river when he was saved by his friends, and he shouted that his head was made of copper, and he has snakes in his stomach, and they are burning him.
Okay.
So all kinds of crazy shit like this is happening. But it wasn't all crazy stuff. There was one farmer who said ever since he ate the bread, he was having these beautiful experiences. And he wrote hundreds of pages of poetry based on the inspiration from eating this bread.
So there was an upside.
That's right. So once it was all said and done, over 300 people were affected and 4 people actually died from this bread-related situation. So what caused it? So in the summer of 1951, it was particularly wet in France. And as such, some of the rye was covered in ergot. This is a fungi that has the active ingredient used to make LSD. Which is a highly hallucinogenic drug. You know, the psychedelic 60s is all about LSD and the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix.
And MK Ultra.
And more important than that, Jeff Sterling presents NTV.
True, yeah.
It was a pure LSD trip, right?
Yeah.
The police were brought in to investigate what was going on. Like, you know, why are people going crazy in this town? Like, what's the baker doing to the bread and all that? So the baker was, interviewed. And he basically said, you know, I didn't do anything. I used the grain that was provided. The grain looked a bit weird. I had no other choice. This is all I had. This is how I make a living. This is what I got to do. So they looked at, okay, where did this grain come from? And it came from the ONIC. And anyway, they tracked it all down. And apparently most of the flour that was causing these issues all around this region was made from flour that was produced by a mill owned by Maurice Mallet. So they went and questioned Mr. Mallet. And he originally denied using rye at all in the mix, but instead used bean flour. At the time, there was a shortage of wheat. So the ONIC mandated the use of rye or bean flour and things to help create enough flour for these bakeries.
Yeah.
But finally, after an interrogation, Maurice admitted that he had a relationship set up where a farmer would go to a baker, the baker would give him bread in exchange for the grain that he grew himself, and then the baker would bring the grain to the mill, and the mill would sell it to the government, and then they'd split the money.
Okay.
So the bags in question were towards the end of the season, and they had a very high content of rye in it, which had this ergot. Maurice claimed at the time he didn't want to accept the grain because of the low quality, but the baker insisted and he didn't know what to do. He didn't want to be out of the money, so he said, you know what? Money's more important than the quality of the grain. Jeez. It's going to be sold wherever, and I'm probably never going to hear nothing about it anyway because it's probably going to be sold on the other side of the country.
Oops.
Government's going to deal with it. Not my issue.
Right.
So like the mill guy agreed to do it. He made the flour, ended up being gray in color, and coated in LSD.
Jesus Christ.
He probably could have made a fortune off it, really, if he really thought of it.
Yeah, if he thought about it in a different way.
Yeah, but I guess he didn't realize what was in it. So again, the bakers who purchased this flour from the ONIC, they only assumed it was okay because, you know, it was bought from a government agency. They can only assume that it has the highest quality or the standards and it's all checked. The government is going to test it and ensure that it's viable for use, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the guys that had the scam going, Miller Millay and the baker, who's a guy by the name of Guy Bruyere, they ended up getting charged with involuntary manslaughter.
Really?
They normally sell poor quality grain and end up causing, you know, people to get sick and die. The flower ended up being tested, and they showed there was levels of ergot, but it was negligible, and they didn't think that was actually enough to confirm that that's what it was. So ultimately, the charges ended up getting dropped. Mm-hmm. But again, the ONIC tried to do everything they could to blame it on somebody else and try and say it's not the government agency's fault, right? If it wasn't this ergot, and obviously something happened. I mean, the town was kind of going crazy, and a lot of people got sick, and people started, you know, getting in monkey knife fights and all these kind of things. So something had to happen, right? So what was it? So there's a few other theories out there. So one is kind of interesting, kind of ties into a story we did in the past, and they said the CIA did it.
The CIA in France?
Well, yeah, they said the CIA were doing tests on LSD and airborne LSD, I guess, to try and see how they can poison people and what the effect it would have and how they can weaponize something like that. Again, I don't know why they would choose an allied nation to test this on, but, you know, we did stories in the past where the CIA definitely did experience with LSD, right?
Oh, for sure. And they did it in Montreal, too. Maybe they just don't like French people.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Yeah. We'll figure that out. There's another theory that the flower, when it was transported, it got tainted in train cars. And, you know, either got fuel or whatever got mixed in with it during transport.
Does fuel make you go nuts?
Maybe not.
Oh, maybe sniffing gas. Yeah. Okay.
I suppose. Yeah. Whatever it was, but anyway, it got tainted, you know, through travel. And it got, maybe it was on the same train as this big drug deal. And some of the LSD leaked into it. And so be it.
Like your chocolate got in my peanut butter?
Yeah, exactly.
Your LSD got into my bread flour.
Yeah. Others blamed like the bleach that was used to make the flour white. But again, I think it would have been a lot more widespread if it was that. That's something they would have done to the entire supply, not just this couple of bags that caused the issues. Mm. But in the end, no one really 100% can say for sure it was the ergot. But it was definitely something that did happen that was pretty crazy. And certainly all signs point to the LSD elements of ergot. That was the fungus that was growing on the rye that caused this town to kind of go crazy over their French bread.
So if you were a baker and your grain came to you and was like, geez, this is kind of grayish looking. I guess I'll just go ahead and make the bread. I mean, I guess I wasn't there. Who knows what I would do? But that seemed like a negligent decision, probably.
I can see that. But the other point of it is, I mean, you got to make a living. You have to buy this grain off the government. This is all that they're providing you to buy. So what do you do?
Well, yeah, that's the other side, right? The baker's probably like, well, it's quality control by the government. It's got to be good enough, right?
Grain must be for some unknown reason. Kind of like how Walter White made his meth blue after a while. So
yeah, that was all branding. And then here's another question. If you saw your neighbor eat the bread and then go nuts, would you just sit there buttering your toast going, that's kind of weird?
Yeah, it's kind of odd. Anyway, I think what it was, by the time they figured out what was causing it all, it was after affecting that many people, right?
That does tie in nicely to The Last of Us, because that's what happened. Like, everybody ate their pancakes and their cakes and their bread and everything without thinking about it. And boom, Zombieville.
That's right.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the story of the French town who were poisoned by the crazy bread from the fungus rye.
And then it just went away.
Yeah, that one specific summer had this crazy growing season. And I guess after this happened, they said, you know what, maybe we got to step up our our quality control a little bit here.
Tighten up those constraints.
Yeah, exactly. So
I don't know. I like bread, but not so much that I would eat it if it made me crazy. But if I don't know, I don't know. All right, here we go. Next story. So going way back, much farther. Actually, your story, it's kind of, I mean, it's a long ass time ago now, like 75 years or whatever. But to me, that seems kind of modern for people to go crazy with crazy bread. So my story is the early modern period in Europe. During the early modern period in Europe, there was a whole bunch of interesting stuff on the go. The Renaissance was in swing, giving the world masterpieces like Michelangelo's David, Leonardo's Mona Lisa, and other art by the other turtles, Raphael and Donatello.
That's right.
An Italian explorer named John Cabot claimed an island in the North Atlantic for England and named it Newfoundland. Technically, this was a few years before the early modern period, but I think it's close enough to mention, as we always have to get it in there somehow.
And there was enough fish to feed the empire for all time.
Exactly. Galileo was using science to point out that the Earth revolved around the sun. And throughout Europe, regular-ass people were being afflicted with various dancing plagues, also called Choreomania, which could be the name of a Bob Fosse-inspired Broadway show, or the St. John's Dance, not to be confused with Ron Hines's The St. John's Waltz. Now, one of these outbreaks, and there was multiple, but one of these outbreaks was in 1518 in the town of Strasbourg, which sounds German, but is in modern day France. Maybe it's a French thing.
It must be.
Okay, we're putting the dots together here now. On an otherwise normal day in July of 1518, a lady by the name of Frau Trophia, who needs no first name because no lady ever needs any first name, even if they're patient zero in one of the weirdest plagues ever in history. Anyway, she stepped out into the street and started dancing to music that only she could hear. Frau Trophia danced all day long, all by herself, well before the Billy Idol song, until she was exhausted. That night, she slept restlessly, only to wake up the next day and start dancing in public all over again. Her feet were reportedly bleeding through her shoes, yet she was unable to stop. She has a weak-ass shoes, man.
Yeah.
She wasn't wearing no Doc Martens.
Moccasins was she wearing.
I guess. Anyway, so she was bleeding through her shoes. Soon afterwards, other people started to join in, and they too danced as if against their will. Over the days and weeks, more and more people heeded the call around the world, whether or not they were ready for a brand new beat. Summer was there, and the time was right for dancing in the street, until an estimated 400 people were part of the impromptu grotesque dance party.
This is like the flash mob, was it?
It was like a flash mob. Is that still a thing?
I don't think so. Like, I'm sure it is, but it was popular there about, you know, 8 or 9 years ago, but I don't see much about it anymore.
Might have been more than 15 years ago.
That's right.
Flash mobs and malls and such. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, we're dancing in Chicago. Don't forget the Motor City.
Exactly. Have you ever seen the video of that video without the music?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It's very odd.
So good. Anyway, back to the dancing plague. So everyone was dancing in the streets. This was a major disruption, not only to those who were afflicted, but to the economy of the town as well. Some dancers begged for help, and they were clearly in agony. Not only was this a painful interference, people actually danced themselves to death, with some estimates reporting about 15 people per day were dropping from the boogie-woogie flu.
So how would this happen? You're just like doing a twist and you just collapse?
They collapsed from exhaustion. So clearly someone had to step in and figure this shit out. A bunch of town leaders, physicians and religious guys mostly, formed a committee to determine the cause and come up with a treatment plan. Surprisingly, they did not settle on demonic possession. Not surprisingly, they did come up with an equally crazy explanation. Hot blood.
Hot blood.
Check it and see.
All the hits.
They're all here. So the conventional cure for hot blood is bloodletting. However, there was an obvious logistical problem. The dancers could not stay still long enough for the physicians to perform the totally legit bloodletting procedure. So they had to go to plan two. They prescribed more dancing. It's like more cowbell. The logic here was that the more they danced, the faster their hot blood would cool down. I don't know what the fuck is going on, man, but this is how they worked it out.
Odd.
Very odd. Musicians were actually hired, and people who were not afflicted by the urge to dance were encouraged to dance, too, as moral support for the affected neighbors and friends. A stage was even erected for the crowds to dance upon. So what do you think? Did the prescription for more dancing cure the dancing plague?
I just think there's more people dancing.
Correct. It did not.
What kind of dances are they doing? Are they doing ballroom dancing? Are they doing the shimmy?
Unspecified. They were all doing the electric slide.
I was about to say, the electric slide in unison?
I have no idea. I don't know. Whatever people did back in 1518, that was whatever dance they were doing.
The bump.
I don't know how to do any dances except for the Bishop O'Neill side to side, don't use your hands.
Yeah.
All right. So where am I? Yeah. More dancing did not cure the dancing plague. Still, all the people danced and danced and everyone suffered. But no problem. They just made a mistake with that whole blood thing. Now they decided that it was actually a curse set upon the town for their various collective sins. So, you know, they tried to go medical cure first.
Religious next, yeah.
Religion is next. So the cure to stop the dancing plague was to stop sinning. So just stop doing those things.
There you go. Feel Hail Marys. Done.
I don't know if they were Catholic.
Get the priest in there. Stick them all in the confession booth.
Nope. They all just collectively said, you got to stop sinning. So they closed all the brothels and canceled all the gambling institutions. And for good measure, just in case, they donated a 100-pound candle to the local cathedral to appease the saints.
That's what they want.
That's exactly what they want, a big-ass candle. Too bad, though, all that shit also did not work. People just kept on dancing. So time for phase two. Music was outlawed, except for string instruments. So there was either a strong string instruments lobbyist group in Strasbourg, or the people had never heard of a good old fiddle hoedown, which would clearly make more people dance.
So is the movie Footloose based on this?
I think Footloose was where they weren't allowed to dance. This is like the opposite of Footloose.
It's the anti-Footloose.
It just proves that every action is an equal and opposite reaction. So Footloose was a response to this.
Yeah.
So they banned music, so people are still dancing to nothing. And now they decided they needed to do a more direct approach. So they loaded all hands into a bunch of carts. And they made a 30-mile trek to a shrine of St. Vitus. This is the patron saint of, among other things, dancers.
Okay.
Who assigns who's the patron saint? There's a patron saint for everything.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway. So the poor, suffering, dancing fools were all given brand new red shoes doused in holy water for their visit to the shrine. And this finally did the trick. The dancers stopped their nonstop rug cutting, and I hope they all took a long, nice, peaceful nap. Maybe this was a long con to get some fancy new kicks, but no one knows for sure what caused the incredibly weird affliction. The most widely accepted theory is the old catch-all, mass hysteria. Things were shitty. There was a bunch of famines, life was hard, and there was always outbreaks of physical diseases like smallpox. The year before the dancing plague was recorded in their history books as the bad year, due to the massive dumpster fire that made 2020 look pretty good in comparison. Sometimes you just gotta dance to take your mind off your woes. But another theory is Urget, which is what they said happened for yours. So just to remind, Urget is a fungus that grows on grains such as rye. And if conditions are right or wrong, I guess, depending on your point of view, you'll get a bunch of this Urget. Urget does have the ability to cause muscle spasms and hallucinations, and it's possible that the people of Strasbourg did unknowingly ingest this fungus. Maybe Frau Trophia made bread from some bad rye and hallucinated music that she couldn't ignore. And it's conceivable that she was compelled to dance, and maybe when the Urget effects wore off, she and the other people of the town were victims of mass hysteria, which would explain why the dancing plague lasted so long. But whatever started it, you cannot deny that the dancing plague of 1518 was one hell of a weird, real historical event worthy of the Some Weird podcast.
That's a weird, weird story. What I would have done is I would have sent, what was Jason Priestley's name on 90210?
Brandon.
Brandon. There you go. Brandon Walsh.
Yes.
Yeah, because apparently he famously hated to dance. So you could have sent him in there and he doesn't dance and they all start following him and there you go. Plague over.
He looks so cool as a 30-year-old teenager with sideburns.
That's right.
They all would have been like, I want to be like that guy.
Yeah, exactly. And then it would have solved all the problems. So how long were you dancing?
It lasted like 2 months.
Jeez.
Yeah. Man, I would have had some nap after that.
My dogs would have been barking after that.
I wouldn't have done shit after that.
That's right.
Fungus. I don't know, man. Like, you can eat something and you have no idea that you've had it. And then it can cause all kinds of crazy shit to go on.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of mushrooms, and that's why, because you don't know if you're eating, like, the good mushrooms that are... I don't find any mushrooms tasty, to be honest with you. I think they all taste like fucking shit.
You're such an anti-mushroom person.
No, I guess they don't taste like anything. I don't get the appeal.
I think a lot of mushrooms absorb the taste of whatever you're cooking them with.
But just eat what you're cooking with instead of the soaked-up juice of them. There you have it. Times where fungi may have affected human behavior.
Hopefully we'll never turn into zombies. What do you think of these stories? And this is the penultimate episode for this season, so we have one more after this. So you can tell us what you think of these stories and share your ideas with us at someweirdpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, you may have a future episode idea for us or something like that. Feel free to send us a message. And if you don't want to send a traditional email, you can hit us up on the X or the Instagram at someweirdpod.
or our website, somewheredpodcast.com. The only thing is, I'm going to say about the website, if you do submit something, we have a form that you could fill in there, right? So if you submit something that way, we have no way to reply to that. So know that we see it and appreciate it, everything that we get. But we're not being snobby because we're not replying. We don't have a way to reply to that. We can't reply to the email, though.
Yeah, for sure. If you haven't done so already, please follow or subscribe wherever you listen so you'll never miss an episode.
And if you've enjoyed this episode and you want to help us out, please leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen so others can discover us. And don't be afraid to tell a friend about the Some Weird Podcast.
The pronunciation of ergot is some weird, by.
Some weird. But if you're just eating your bread like you do every other day and all of a sudden you're like, you know what? I'm being chased by a tiger. Also, my head is made out of copper. That would be terrifying.
I need to grab my knife now and have a knife fight. So, yeah, no, for sure. Absolutely.
Who would win in a knife fight? You or your wife?
Oh, me for sure.
Well, your arms are like 4 feet long, so you're like Slender Man.
That's right.
Yeah, she wouldn't have a chance. Now, me and my husband are about the same height, so.
Fairer fight for sure.
Yeah, it'd be a fairer fight. Let's try it out later. We'll let you know who wins in a knife fight.
Yeah, show a bit of LSD in your bread and see what happens.
Sounds good.